So to get started, last week we talked about a worldview. And if you remember, a worldview is a set of beliefs that we have, that everybody has, about life's most important issues. So it's what we believe about reality. It's what we believe and what someone believes about everything. And we talked that everybody has a worldview. Remember, everybody has a view and a set of beliefs about what they think really is in reality, what the world is like. And we likened a worldview to a pair of glasses. If you remember that, it's like having a pair of glasses on. And depending upon the type of glasses that you have, that's how you see the world. So if you have the correct pair of glasses on, you'll see things clearly for what they are. But if you have the wrong pair of glasses on, you have the wrong worldview or a distorted worldview, you're not going to see things correctly. And that's why the Scripture repeatedly talks about people who deny the truth. They're living in blindness. So they're really not seeing everything for what it really is. And as Christians, our worldview consists of things like our belief in God, morality, purpose, the world around us, who we are as human beings. And everybody who has a worldview has to answer that question, or those questions. And we also discuss that worldviews are not equal. Everybody cannot be right. So there's a lot of people that are wrong, okay? And we talked about how we can distinguish and judge differing worldviews. So the Buddhist or the atheist or the secular humanist or anybody, we talked about how we can judge their view of the world and critique that, and even looking at our own. So we talked about the test of reason, how the worldview must be reasonable. It can't be contradictory. It can't have things in it that are like self-contradictory type statements within their worldview. So we talked about things like the skeptic who says you can't believe anything, or the relativist who says that all truth is relative, things like that. We talked about the test of the external world, so the worldview needs to be able to make sense of what we see around us. So the cosmos, science, what we see going on in nature. It needs to be able to answer questions about the things that are going on outside of us. Things like pain, things like evil, suffering. It needs to be able to have answers to questions like that. It also needs to pass the test of the internal world, so what's going on inside of us, who we are as human beings, the things that we feel and experience inside of us, so like hopes and desires and the guilt that we feel for wrongdoing. It needs to be able to make sense of those kinds of things. And then the test of practice, we need to be able to live out our worldview and live it out consistently. And so if someone can't do that, it shows that there's an inadequacy in their worldview. And finally, we discuss as Christians, And having a Christian worldview, how it's important for us to be able to defend our worldview to the culture, to defend our worldview to the people around us that may not hold the same view as us. And we derive this from 1 Peter 3:15, which says, always be ready to make a defense, which in Greek is apologia, which is where we get the word apologetics. Always be ready to make a defense to everyone who asks you to give an account for the hope that is in you, yet with gentleness and reverence. So we talked about the need to go out and argue for the faith and yet do it lovingly and graciously. Not being argumentative, but arguing appropriately for the faith and defending our beliefs. Any questions about what we talked about last week before we move on? I've learned from my small group, in order to stimulate discussion, you have to like have really long, awkward silences. So, and people feel compelled, like, man, I've got to say something. Okay, someone tell me that what you think is the most central or core claim that we have as Christians. What do you think is the most central thing to our belief system?
Jesus Christ rose from the dead.
Okay, that's very good. That's not exactly the answer I was looking for, but that probably is what distinguishes us from other religions, primarily.
Christ is God.
Yeah, Jesus was God.
Okay, yeah, and I'm going to be even more basic than that. Is I'm just going to say God. Okay, so the fact that we believe in God, that our scriptures start out with, in the beginning, God. So our belief system, first and foremost, is founded upon...
It's founded upon the concept
Let's try this one.
You didn't say one at work.
There we go. Our belief system is founded upon the notion of God, that there is a maximally great being who's perfect in every possible capacity that he could be perfect in. It's the very foundation of what we believe. So apart from Christ, apart from the Bible, everything else that we believe doctrinally, it begins first with God. And our doctrines and truth and everything else springs from that. And not only that, we believe that God is one. So we don't believe that God is a one with the universe. We don't believe in some of these other polytheistic type beliefs, but we believe in one God. Genesis 1:1 opens up with, "In the beginning, God." Isaiah 45:5 says, "I am the Lord, and there is no other. Besides me, there is no God." Revelation 22:13 says, "I am the Alpha and the Omega, the first and the last, the beginning and the end." And then God, when he comes to Moses in the form of the burning bush, and when he's delivering the law, and he tells Moses that, he said, "I am." So he's saying, "I am reality. Like, I am. I just exist." He's the very core of everything that is. And so that's the foundation of what we believe. And as Christians, what do we believe about God? What are some of the attributes about God that we believe in?
That he's just.
He's good.
Okay.
I'll put these over on the side.
Eternal.
Okay, eternal.
Sovereign.
Okay, sovereign.
Forgiving.
Okay, someone said good. I'm going to lump in forgiving and love and mercy and all.
He's all knowing.
Maximally great. Okay, he's all knowing.
Powerful.
Yeah, give me some more of the alls. The
all powerful.
That's right.
Omnipresent.
He's omnipotent.
Almighty.
Okay, what about his...
Is the question what we believe about God?
That's right.
He answers prayers.
Okay, right. Which would mean that he's all-knowing.
Down there, I can't see.
I do. It's basically wrapped up in this, that he's all good and he's all powerful and he's all-knowing. And what about what he's like as persons? We have a body, but God is a spirit. Right, so he does not have a body. It's like an unembodied mind is kind of the best way to describe that.
With truth and with good.
Yeah, that's right. He is truth. He's the foundation of truth.
He's a personal God. He's involved in his creation.
Okay. Personal.
He's a creator.
Okay.
Active now. He's not just a passive observer.
That's right. That's right. Okay, so if God exists like we believe that he does, he's a maximally great being, then in addition to his attributes, he has other titles that must and should be given to him. Things like he's Lord, he's Creator. We talked about that. He's Judge. He's the sovereign ruler. And as humans... And as Christians, for us to believe this has huge implications for us and what we believe about the world and about our position in the world and the fact that we are under someone else's authority. So it gives us reason for, in addition to the things that it places on us, it also gives us reason for real hope, because there really is something outside of ourselves that gives us a meaning and a reason for life. It gives us purpose. There's a real source of pleasure and joy that's not in just the things that are around us. And so before we move on to defend the claim of God, I guess I want us to consider for just a second, I think it helps us to understand why it's so important that we believe in God and the God of the Bible. If we step back for a second and look at what life would be like without God. If there was no God, what would the implications be for us? So if the truth claims that we believe about God as revealed in Scripture were not true and there really was no God, what would that look like? What would that mean for us as human beings? What would that mean for the world? And so if you think about for just a second what life, what it would mean if there was no God. If there is no God, all of life that we know of, so everything that lives currently on our planet, and if there's life anywhere else, whatever, everything that lives is doomed to death. And so everything is going to die. It's inevitable. So the universe at this point ends, everything ends in death. So if you think about your own life, think about like an infinite blackness, and all of a sudden this little spark pops in to being, and then very quickly it's just gone. It's just snuffed out. And that's it, with blackness on and on and on forever. And if there is no God, we really have to face the fact that is what really is. Like, there's just nothingness. It's just deadness, darkness, nothing. Like, everything that we see now is just a blimp on the scale of time that's just going to be gone forever. And we can act like it's something more than that. We can make life seem like it's more, like it means more, and we have all these meaningful things that we invest in, but really it's nothing. Like, it's all going to die. And so the you that currently exists, if you think about that, if you look inward at yourself and the you that was a child, that has grown up, that has memories, that lived and experienced life, like that you would be gone. It would be gone forever. And as humans, God says we have eternity placed in our heart. And the thought about us being extinguished forever and being stamped out is a thought that's almost unbearable as a person. At least it is for me. And if you expand this out even further into the universe, all the stars, all the energy that's out there in the universe, it's eventually going to be used up and it would die. And everything would be black and cold forever. And what's more than that is if there is no God, there really can be no meaning or purpose to this life. So if everything ends in death and everything ends in destruction, so if we all die in the end, then there really is no meaning or point to anything that we do. For there's no lasting significance. So if I invest in, you know, trying to find a cure for cancer and then everybody dies in the end anyway, what's the point? There really is no point. I've maybe extended someone's life a little longer. If that's all that there is this life, there's really no ultimate meaning in what I did. It's just an illusion. And everybody that acts like there's meaning is just creating an illusion for themselves. And so all the things that so many people hold dear, and even people who do not believe in the God that we believe in and trust the God that we trust in, they're so passionate about things like world peace and hunger and poverty and cure for AIDS and all these social causes, but really they're meaningless apart from any ultimate transcendent purpose or reality. They carry no lasting meaning. And so apart from God, I would argue there is no ultimate meaning to life. There is really no need to combat poverty or hunger or fight for world peace, because there's really no ultimate purpose in that. The other thing is there's no value in the universe. And by that I mean moral virtue. There's no right and wrong. If there really is no God, there is no absolute moral standard out there. So everything is subjective. It's what we as human beings would create on our own. We would make up our own little moral rules that we just, on a whim, say is good. So this maybe would benefit our society, so we're going to make this right and this wrong. So it's all very arbitrary. So if life all ends at the grave, we can't really say that Hitler was worse than Mother Teresa. Like, we can't make that claim. We can say that people at that time thought that he was bad based on their view of what they called right and wrong. But we couldn't really say that Mother Teresa was a better person than Adolf Hitler, because there is no ultimate law to judge them by. And since there is no standard, there is no obligation to live a certain way. So if people do not accept the God that we believe in and accept his perfect moral standard, then for them, they create their own right and wrong. and they can live any way that they please because there's no grounding to the morality. And this is why we talked about last week, I think Charles brought up, that with someone who does not believe in God, there's no ultimate reason for them to do certain moral actions because there's no grounding for why they should do those things. So they may do right things, but
anything goes.
Anything could go, right. There's no real reason to call one thing right or one thing wrong. And an author, Dostoevsky, said, if there is no immorality, then all things are permitted. And it's really this belief that has propelled a lot of people to commit very horrendous crimes in the last century. Some quotes, and these are really disturbing quotes, that were taken from communist torturers. I think it's from Russia. In some of the prison camps. These are actual quotes from some of the guards that were torturers there. One of them said, "There is no God, no hereafter, no punishment for evil. We can do what we wish." Another one said, "I thank God, in whom I don't believe, that I have lived to this hour when I can express all the evil in my heart." And so, if you really look at some of the awful things like Stalin's Russia, the belief system that there was no God, and the implications with that there is no absolute morality, allowed them and gave them the ability to create a morality of their own that I guess appeased their conscience to be able to carry out these awful crimes against human beings. And the world would be like this, I would argue, all the way around if there was not God to ground what we believe about right and wrong. And it's in light of this that the thought of life without God, the author of Ecclesiastes says, in Ecclesiastes 3, 19 and 20, says, "The fate of the sons of men and the fate of beasts is the same. As one dies, so dies the other. Indeed, they all have the same breath, and there is no advantage for man over beast. For all is vanity. All go to the same place. All came from the dust, and all return to the dust. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity." So the author of Ecclesiastes knows that if there is no God, everything is meaningless. Life is nothing. Everything dies. Man, beast alike, we all go to the grave. We came from dust, we return to dust. There is nothing for us. And so I think a world like that is so despairing, it's so dark, that not only are we obligated because this is the truth and we believe it's the truth, but we offer hope to a world that would deny such a God and the truth of such a God, that would have such awful implications for them. And so as Christians, a lot of times we're thought of as people that are restrictive and people that are placing burdens on people and not freeing people. We're just killjoys. But in fact, we're adding true hope and true joy to the world, because everything else apart from this God is despair. And so I think it's important that we fight for the truth claims of the God of the Bible that we believe in. Any questions or comments about that? Or
some people live to as they like, right or wrong, most of their life until they're in pain and on death's door, and then who do they call on?
Yeah.
Dear God, help me.
Sure. That's right.
Then they know him.
That's right. Because the Bible says that they know this God and they suppress him because of their unrighteousness.
In those quotes you read, he mentioned the evil of my heart. They recognize, although they deny,
yeah,
they still recognize there is an absolute moral authority.
Yeah,
he knows,
sure,
he's evil. But he says he's free from that just because he doesn't believe.
Right. Sure.
Stamped on the scripture you just referenced. No.
That's right. And the evil causes the unbelief. Ecclesiastes 3, 19 and 20.
Well, Jordan, would the other side not argue that they would go by the laws of the land or the government, or they fight for poverty and peace for the time that they are on this earth? Would that not be their argument?
Yeah, that is what they would say. But I would say that who decides what those laws of the land are? And I think that's why this is so important, I think, even as it turns into political debates or things that we see kind of going on in the broader culture, you know, things like the marriage debate. And we're dealing with a culture that is denying the truth of God and the truth claims that he gives us based on what he has said and who he is, and they're creating their own of what they feel like is good and right.
And also and, why they want to do away with our history of how the walls of Lane were created.
Sure.
Because that was on a foundation of, sure, you know, recognizing God. So they don't want that anymore.
Sure. I think it's right. Yeah, go ahead.
Our president can say, God bless Planned Parenthood.
Yeah.
How conflicting is that?
Yeah. Yeah, I think when we lose the grounding of God and his law, and our founders knew this well, that then we lose the basis for our laws that we have. Okay, so what I want to do today is I'm going to look at one argument for God's existence and how we can defend the claim of why we believe God. And then in next week, I'm going to look at maybe four or five arguments very quickly. And before I get into those, the one today, don't be discouraged if you're like, hey, I don't really get that, or that doesn't really ring a bell for me, or that doesn't really do it for me. I'm going to give several, one today and several next week, and so maybe certain things will ring a bell with you. Not everything resonates with me as it does with someone else, so that's fine. And if you don't get something today, don't worry about it. I always say if it's over your head, maybe it's hitting the person right behind you, right between the eyes, so it's no big deal. So as Christians, when we go about thinking about how we claim or defend the claim of the God that we believe in, a lot of people resort to, I just believe, I just know that he exists. And I'll be honest with you, I think that's a good reason. I think God's placed it in our hearts to know that he exists and that he is real. I think every man knows that. We're made in the image of God, and I think we know that. And to be honest, I think we can have perfectly good reason to believe in God if we never have an argument up here, okay? And I think lots of people do, and I think that's fine. But I want to give us some additional reasons to believe in that God and why we believe in that God. And Psalm 19:1 gives us a little bit of a insight into how we might go about defending our view of God to the world. It says, "The heavens are telling the glory of God, and the firmament proclaims his handiwork." And so what the Bible is saying here is that the universe, if you look at nature around us, and you look at the universe, you look at the stars, you look at the planets, they're pointing to God as creator. So they are speaking, they are yelling and screaming, saying God is real. He is the creator. It's like they're begging us to look at them and examine them. They're sending a message, it says. It says day after day, night after night, they pour forth speech about who God is. And so, for any person, us, or any thinking person, any rational person, they should look at the stars, they should look at the universe, look at the world around them, and they should ask why. They should ask the why question. And I think that we should encourage people to look and to ask that question, and to help us think about why we should ask that why question. Why does anything exist? Why is there something and not nothing? And more specifically, why is the universe here? One of my professors wrote this, and I think it's helpful. It says, imagine that you're hiking through the woods, and you come across a translucent ball lying on the forest floor. So this little clear ball lying on the forest floor. You would naturally wonder how it came to be there. If one of your hiking partners said to you, hey, it just exists inexplicably, don't worry about it, you'd either think he was crazy or figure that he just wanted you to keep moving. No one would take seriously the suggestion that the ball existed there with literally no explanation. Now suppose you increase the size of the ball in this story so that it's the size of a car. That wouldn't do anything to satisfy or remove the demand for an explanation. Suppose it were the size of a house, same problem. Suppose it were the size of the entire universe, same problem. Merely increasing the size of the ball does nothing to affect the need of an explanation. And so the point is that the universe is here, and it demands an explanation of why it's here. So it's there for everyone to see. It's enormous. It's humongous, and it's there for everyone to look up at it. And it demands an explanation for people to see why it's there. And so this is the thing I want to key in on this morning and give an argument for why it points to the existence of the God that we believe in. And the argument has been dubbed the Kalam Cosmological Argument, or for short, you could say the cosmological argument. So it's the argument for God's existence based upon the cosmos, so hence the cosmological argument. So it's an argument by looking at the cosmos, looking at the universe, and showing that God is the creator of it, and he's the best explanation for why the universe exists. And so here's how, if I was going to write out the argument, here's what it looks like. It's really simple. First premise is this: whatever begins to exist has a cause. I'm going to go through these one by one here in just a second. The second premise: the universe began to exist. So what follows?
The universe has a cause.
The universe has a cause. And at the very end, so we'll go through these and I'll show you why these are true. And then at the very end, we'll look at what the cause of the universe must be and how it's unbelievable how amazingly it points to the God that we believe in. And this can also be drawn out this way. So you said the universe, and it either has a beginning, or no beginning. If it has a beginning, it's either caused or uncaused. If it's caused, we'll talk about it in just a minute, what that looks like. Any questions about this? Is this pretty straightforward so far? Okay, so the first premise, and obviously I want you to see that this follows very logically, right? So whatever begins to exist has a cause. The universe began to exist. So if these two things are true, then this is true right here. Okay, it follows logically. And so for someone to be able to dispute this right here, they have to deny either this or this, okay? So whatever begins to exist has a cause. We'll talk about the first premise first. This is very obvious, right? Can any of y'all think of anything that begins to exist that doesn't have a cause? Maybe. We'll talk about that in a second. We're skipping ahead. What's that? That's what I would say, yeah. Yeah, this is so obvious. Like, it's so obvious that it's really hard to even explain it. Because I would have to use more complicated reasons to explain why this is true. Okay, it's so basic. It's as basic as saying, like, I can feel things with my hand. Well, it takes a lot more complicated explanation to explain why that's true. Like, it's just so obviously true that my sense perception is real. Okay, and it's so obvious that everything that starts or begins to exist, it was caused by something else. And so, like, an example may help this. Like right now, you are not worried that as we're sitting in here that a monkey is popping into existence in your car right now and defiling your car, and when you go to open the door, it's going to, like, jump out and attack you, right? Like, you don't worry about that because it doesn't happen, right? Things just don't pop into existence.
That's my kid.
Yeah. Yes, yes.
One of the violent kids could be in your car.
They hid under the seat.
One of the violent kids could be in your car, don't they?
But it's absurd. So it does not happen. And Jonathan Edwards commented on this point, and he said that if things could pop into existence, then why doesn't just anything and everything pop into existence? Why don't computers just pop into existence, or James Edwards just pop into existence? Like, they just don't, because it's absurd. Things do not happen like that. And for someone who would claim that the universe or anything else that exists would pop into existence out of nothing, it's really worse than magic. Okay, because in magic, you at least have like a magician and a hat, right? But here, you don't have anything. It's just nothingness.
So what define cause, then? I mean, there, when you're saying everything exists because of a cause, that's because something else made it happen? Or that
that's right.
Conditions were right so that this just happened?
Yeah, no,
the,
I think...
The evolutionist would claim that, well, conditions were right randomly.
Correct.
These things happen. But there's no intelligence behind it.
Okay, so let me... And I was going to get to that here in a minute. Maybe this would be helpful. When I say the universe, what I mean by the universe, so just imagine that this is the universe. I mean all of space, time, energy, matter, nature, and the laws that come with nature. So, like, everything. So, even, like, so all the matter, we all get that. All the energy, so, like, everything that the stars are burning and putting off light, all that energy, all the space, so the stuff that's in between us and the moon, even though it seems like there's nothing there, there's really space there. Okay, all of that. So, even all those laws.
Well, what if they just always...
So this whole thing, what I'm saying is this whole thing must have a cause.
Maybe it doesn't have to have a cause. Maybe it always existed would be their argument. I mean,
okay,
the argument.
Then we'll address that okay. Right here. So that's good, though, because you're right. That is what they would say. And so Charles pointed out a good objection that people will say, and I've had people ask this, well, who caused God? And as Christians, what do we believe about God? That he is... Eternal. So we believe that God did not begin. He never had a beginning. So he's beginningless. There is no start to his existence. So as Christians, we believe that he is the uncaused cause. Is ultimately what we believe about God.
And humanists believe just one step below that. They take God out of the equation. His creation is what was uncaused.
Correct. And we'll show that I think that's
okay.
That's impossible.
For a evolutionist or whatever to... doesn't believe in God, to say that it gets down to number two, that everything, these elements that create a situation for things to happen, they just always existed. Doesn't that thought demand an answer? Just because normal reason doesn't believe that everything just always existed.
Right.
It's just not.
Yeah, I'll address that right here. Okay. Yeah. No, you're right. This gets really mind-boggling here. Just a minute. It'll get worse. So something that does not have a beginning does not need a cause, because there was never a time that it did not exist. Okay. Which would be God. So any other questions or comments about this? I mean, does this seem fairly obvious? And really, the big a lot of claims, and there's physicists, like Lawrence Krauss is a prominent physicist, that says that the universe popped into being out of nothing, from nothing, by nothing. And it's just such an absurd claim. And he believes that because he has this other belief that there is no God. And again, and this is not helpful, or this is helpful for dealing with someone who does not believe in God, but also people who believe that God is like one with the universe, or people who believe in many gods. So this is not just an argument for an atheist, but really lots of people who have very weird conceptions about the universe, or think that God and the universe are like co-eternal together.
I just think it's meant for us not to be able to comprehend it.
It's very difficult to comprehend. But what I think, and going along with what Psalm said, is that I think these things, and we'll show, these things point to God. So as Christians, when we look at the universe, what we see is on our side. Like, it points to the God that we believe in. Okay, so now this one here, the universe began to exist. I want to give you three arguments for why I believe the universe began to exist. One of them is a philosophical argument, and the other two are scientific arguments. And so if you don't get one of them, that's fine. Maybe you can just latch on to one of the three. So the first one, the philosophical argument, is the space that I have here. The philosophical argument is that if you think of the universe as a collection of events, of things that have happened in the past. So let's say you look at all the past and you slice it up into 1 minute sections, okay? So if you think about right here is the present where we're at. And you go back this way. So say the universe is infinite. And we're right here, all right? And so we're arguing against what Carol was talking about. People would say, well, the universe just has existed forever. And so if the universe has existed an infinite amount of time in the past, then that would mean that there is, let's just say these are all one-minute slices right here. So how many one-minute slices would there be? An infinite amount. Okay. And what I'm going to show here is that I think an actual infinite does not and cannot actually exist. Okay? So this is going to be really good. So ready to wrap your brain around this. And there's a couple other ones that are scientific that we'll do here in just a second. Mike, you don't have to leave, man. Okay, and so if an actual infinite cannot exist, and I'm going to show that I think it's absurd that it can't exist, then the universe cannot be infinite because there can't be an actual infinite amount of events in the past. Does that make sense? So if I can show you that there cannot be an infinite amount of events, then it would show that the universe has not existed for an infinite amount of time. Is that clear as mud? Okay.
Infinite nothingness.
Okay. So, an infinite amount of events, but if an infinite cannot exist, there cannot have been an infinite amount of events, therefore the universe must have started somewhere, meaning that there was a finite amount of events. So it can only be so old. It can't go on and on and on and on. All right. So although in math, if you were at a math class, they talked about infinity. So if you were at a calculus class and we use infinity in calculus, it's always used as a theoretical number or a theoretical value. So it's always used like in a limit or it's something that's not actual in reality, but you use it as a limit to help you solve an equation in math. And so to show you that an infinite can't exist, what I want to do is use infinity in a couple things to show you that it's absurd. It's an absurd concept that does not exist in the real world. Okay? So just imagine that I have an infinite amount of marbles, okay? An actual infinite amount of marbles. All right? And I'm wanting to share some of those with Charles, okay? So this is the symbol for infinity, the lazy eight. Okay, so let's say that I want to give, so I have an infinite amount, and I want to give all of them to Charles, okay? So I give an infinite amount of marbles to Charles. So what does that equal? For me, yeah. How many do I have left? Zero, okay? Very good. Okay, so let's say that let's start over again. I've got my infinite amount of marbles, and I want to take all of the even-numbered ones, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, so on, and give those to Charles, okay? So I start out with an infinite amount, and how many am I giving to Charles? Okay, but how much is that? Infinite. Yeah, half of an infinite is an infinite amount, okay? Okay, so now, how many marbles do I have left? An infinite amount. That's right. Okay. All right, so let's do it again. Now let's say that we have my marbles all counted out in front of me, my infinite amount. And I want to give Charles marbles. I'm going to keep 1 through 5, and I'm going to give him 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, on out to infinity. So I start out with an infinite amount, and I give Charles how many? An infinite amount. Now, how many do I have left?
Five, right?
So how can you have an infinite minus an infinite gives you zero, an infinite minus an infinite gives you infinity, and an infinite minus an infinity gives you five, right? It's absurd, okay? And what this is showing is that this is not something that really exists, okay? It's an absurd concept. It's something that cannot be real. What's that? Yeah, this is not a trick question, okay? So what I'm saying is that it's just a concept. It's not something that really is real. So if an infinite cannot really exist, and by using this example, we're showing that if we try to use an actual infinite in real life, it gives us absurd results, which means that it's really not real because it gives self-contradictory things. So if something's self-contradictory, it's not true. And so what that means is that an actual infinite cannot actually exist. So there cannot be an actually infinite amount of time that has existed in the past for the universe. So based on this, I would argue that the universe is not infinite, and so that the universe actually began to exist. Okay, any comments about that at all? We'll go on to one that's maybe a little simpler.
That's where faith comes in.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay, so another argument would be the expansion of the universe. So with the advent of the Hubble telescope and Einstein's theory of relativity, we've learned a lot of things about the cosmos. And one of the things that they discovered, they used to think that everything in the universe just stood still, and also that the Earth was the very center. But one of the things that they've learned through discoveries with the Hubble telescope, and one of the things they noticed was there was this red light that they were seeing way off in the distance, which ultimately meant that things were moving further apart from one another. And so what they've discovered is that the universe is expanding, and it's getting bigger. And it's not that planets are flying apart from each other, it's that the actual space in between everything is expanding. So you picture a balloon, and if I put a bunch of buttons on a balloon, and when it was all the way deflated, everything would be really close to each other. And if I started to blow up the balloon, it's not that the buttons would be moving apart from each other, but it's that the balloon itself is expanding. And that's what's happening in the universe. Everything is expanding, and it's getting further and further apart. All the galaxies are moving further and further apart from one another. Okay, so if the universe, if it's expanding, and it's, you know, let's say it's yay big now. That's a Kentucky way of saying it.
Yay.
It's yay big. All right, and it's getting bigger. So if we rewind the clock back into time, what's happening to it? Yeah, it's getting smaller, and it's getting smaller, and it's getting smaller, and it's getting smaller. And it gets so small that they call it the singularity, that it gets down to where it's nothing. And so that's why modern science has posited the theory of the Big Bang, that if you rewind the clock, and they say it takes 14 billion years, but if you rewind the clock all the way back, that there literally was an instant when there was nothing. Everything, all the matter and energy was condensed into one infinitesimally small point, they say, that really was so small that it's nothing, that there actually was nothing. So the science says that the universe exploded into being is what the current theory is.
Is that the theory currently where it collapses and expands and then it'll collapse and expand and just
no.
infinitely over and over?
No.
That was an old theory.
Correct. And that is something people posit. But
yeah.
this theory, when it came out, like, it was so upsetting. Like, people said it was like the, for the scientific community, it was a very heartbreaking thing for them because it just screams of God's existence because they were always banking on the fact that nature's always been here. But there was a point in time, they're realizing, where nature and all the laws they're using to examine nature actually came into being. Any questions about that?
What did they say caused?
Right.
They don't know. See, that's where they get back to here, and they say, well, it must be uncaused. This really presents a problem for people. Like, God is not giving them any way out of this. Okay? There's one quote that says that talks about the scientific struggle, and they're climbing, and you have this mountain there in front of them, and they're just trying, and they're making all these discoveries. And it ends like a bad dream for them, because just as they pull themselves over the last hill, there's a band of theologians sitting on the other side that have had the answers for thousands of years. Okay, so in the final argument for why the universe began to exist is the second law of thermodynamics, which basically states that everything, that unless energy is being fed into a system, that everything will become increasingly disorderly. So in a good practical way to think about that is, just imagine a room, a small room, and I bring in a very hot cup of coffee and set it on the table, all right, and the coffee's hot and it's steaming. What's going to happen over the course of time? The coffee's going to cool down, so everything will reach a state of what's called equilibrium. So the room temperature will rise probably just slightly, and the coffee will cool down. All the energy will dissipate in the room until it reaches a state of where everything's dispersed evenly throughout the room, all the energy is. And so unless more energy is added in, so unless you microwave the coffee, everything will tend towards that state of disorder. You think about that. Every time you put gas in your car, you're reinforcing this law. Like, you have to input energy into the system in order to keep it running. And so our primary energy source on Earth comes from the sun. But it's a finite amount of energy, so it's being burned up. It's being used up. And ultimately, everything will come to a state where all the energy is used up and everything will tend to disorder and chaos. And so, same concept as the universe expanding. If you think of all this energy is dissipating out and being used up, well, there was a point in time where, if you rewind the clock, where it wound all the way up, right? And so, if it's going to burn out, there had to be a beginning where it started. Because if it was infinite in the past, why haven't we used up all the energy already?
That you might go out and look at a star, it is not there. It took light years for it to get here.
That's right.
And it is no.
It could already be burned out.
Yes, you see the light, but it took it so long to get here. It's no longer a star.
Yeah.
You see the light.
Good strength there. Okay, so to wrap this up, this is what's really cool about this, okay? So I think we have good reasons to believe both of these. And so for us, it follows that the universe has a cause, okay? So if we've given good reasons why the universe must have began to exist, and I think we do, I think philosophy and science both help us with this, and this seems obvious, then it seems to me that it follows logically that the universe must have a cause. Okay, so we look at, if you remember, what was the universe made of?
Nothing.
It was made of space.
Time, matter, energy.
Time.
Matter.
Nature.
Energy. Yeah, all of nature. Okay? So what would it take to be the cause of all these things? So if there was a cause that brought about these things, what would it have to be? So brings about everything. Okay, yes, okay, so it would have to be very powerful. Okay, what else?
Purposeful.
Authority.
Design.
Okay, so use these here. It would have to be spaceless, right? Because it would have to be outside of the thing that it created. Okay, it would have to be timeless. It would have to be immaterial because it came about, it brought material into being. It would have to not have a beginning. It would have to be uncaused. And I think it would have to be personal because it brought something about at a specific point in time. So it, whatever it was, it willed it to be at that specific time. So it's not like there was laws existing that in nature, because nature itself came into being. And as Christians, we look at, okay, what cause could be enormously powerful, immaterial, timeless, spaceless, no beginning, uncaused, and personal? Yeah, and look at the attributes that we gave earlier for who God is. That He's eternal. So He's always been. He's all-knowing. He's all-powerful. He's everywhere. He's spirit. He's personal. And so we look at the universe, and we can look at, and so we resound with what Psalm says, that the heavens declare God's glory. And so they're showing that all this stuff came into being, and the thing that brought it into being can be none other than the God that we believe in. And that's why in Romans 1:19-20 it says, since what may be known about God is plain to them, because God has made it plain to them. For since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made, so that men are without excuse. And this is why the Bible says that men are without excuse. They can look out around them and see that it is God that created everything. They know that they are under him. There is no excuse for them. And again, I don't expect them to go through all this. And I think an ordinary person can look out and understand this without even having to go through all this. I think this is important that we do this. But I think the common man can look and see God in the world that he sees around him. So that's it. Any questions about that before we close in prayer? Or comments? Or
it just comes back to Genesis to me, where he says, I am who I am.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
I'm period.
Yeah, and what's exciting is that God leaves no man any excuse. And so wherever we look, we can find God there. It's not a blind belief.
It is.
Yeah.
When you go into why our God of the Bible is different, some people just believe a God exists.
Yeah. I will. I think it takes a while to piece all that together.
Yeah.
But this is just one piece of the puzzle. And please don't go out and try to evangelize with somebody about doing this. Okay? I don't know. But this is very helpful for us as Christians. I think. Yeah. Tell them about infinity. That'll really good. Okay. Let me pray and we'll close. God, thank you for your truth. Thank you that you have left us with no excuse, God. You've made yourself abundantly clear in the world around us, in our own hearts, in the scriptures, through your spirit, through Jesus who came. God, no man is without excuse before you. Thank you that you've made that clear to us. There's no reason for unbelief, God. But it's our unrighteousness that suppresses the truth, and that's why we need Jesus to give us a new heart and a new understanding and open our eyes. So God, may we be grateful for that. That gives us an ultimate understanding of truth. It's in Christ's name I pray. Amen.